Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Bernie Kinkle, the only person you're gonna scare is yourself!
Charlie! What are you doing?
Keep the noise down.
What are you doing here?
Maze! Just in time.
There's a whole load of police here. Take the word, you're gonna hurt yourself. Or someone else.
How many children are you friends with?
Hello and welcome to Netflix, where we're delivering you everything you need to know about The Crown Season 3. But this time we're chatting about the People's Princess, Diana Spencer, who we're expecting to see in Season 4. Stay tuned for all the gossip from filming and what really happened. Hi guys, so I'm Helen Daly, presenter of Netflix. I'm here with Helen Kelly.
Hello.
And Thomas Evans.
Hello.
He's our royal expert for today. And so basically we're here to talk about Princess Diana and her involvement in The Crown Season 3. So for a bit of real life background, Lady Diana, she first met Prince Charles when she was 16 in November 1977. He was then dating her older sister, Lady Sarah, and they were guests at a country weekend during the summer of 1980 when she watched him play polo and he took a serious interest in Diana as a potential bride. So famously, their relationship progressed very, very quickly. There was an invitation to Balmoral to meet his family one weekend in November 1980. And, you know, Lady Diana was well received by the Queen, the Queen Mother and the Duke of Edinburgh. Prince Charles subsequently courted Diana in London and the Prince proposed on the 6th of February 1981. Lady Diana accepted, but their engagement was kept secret for the next few weeks. And I guess we know the rest, the big dress, the white wedding. So, Tom, what kind of don't we know about Diana?
Well, I think it sounds like strange, but you had to start with Diana. You have to start with Camilla, to be honest. When Charles meets Diana for the first time, he's already met Camilla. He's already fallen in love with Camilla. She's obviously married someone else by this point in Andrew Parker Bowles. And I think for the Crown's perspective, they've already kind of introduced that storyline in season three. So it's the perfect backdrop for Diana to appear in season four with all of that in mind. And that's probably fair to real life as well, because Camilla is this ever-present figure in their relationship, essentially.
Yeah, so as a background for season three, obviously, we see Charles, played by Josh O'Connor, meet Camilla, and they kind of strike up a good relationship straight off, but she kind of has this love for Andrew Parker Bowles. And the Crown portrays it as the Queen Mother and Mountbatten decide that they don't want Charles to be with Camilla. How true to life was that?
I think personally a little unfair. Like, it's obviously one of those things you can never say definitively. But my impression and what you read, so Penny Junior, for example, writes a lot about this, is that Charles was infatuated with Camilla, but she had eyes for Andrew Parker Bowles. So rather than it being this storyline of him not being allowed to marry the woman he loved, it was more a case of her choosing another man, essentially. Might be a little unfair, but...
And, you know, there is like some quotes from the wedding as well about how Diana kind of saw Charles and Camilla, even at the wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what's odd with this, is that from day one, Camilla's always there and Diana's made aware of Camilla from very, very early on in their relationship. And I don't think that ever goes, like, all the way through, even kind of after Prince Harry's birth later on. Camilla is always this figure. And Charles is said to have, like, been phoning her on the honeymoon and all sorts. It's odd.
And, you know, taking things back to Diana, obviously she was called the People's Princess, probably for a reason. You know, what kind of impact did she have on the United Kingdom and the royal family as a whole?
I think she completely revolutionised the royal family, to be honest. You know, prior to her arrival on the scene, it was rightly or wrongly maybe seen as this kind of quite stuffy, old-fashioned institution. Everything was very prim and proper. Everything was all done kind of by a timetable, essentially. So you'd go on a royal event and it would all be very kind of scheduled. Diana completely changed that. She'd go and talk to people, interact, actually kind of had her own personality and put her own stamp on things. You know, like she famously, at the time there was a lot of stigma around AIDS victims, and she really famously like went into a hospice and like held hands with them and like completely kind of changed this perception that, you know, you couldn't go near them and that sort of thing. And like Diana was just this completely revolutionary figure, I think you could say.
And she was also a bit of a celebrity.
Yeah, I think she's so glamorous, she's so beautiful. Like she comes over and I think for the first time she made the royal family cool in a way. Mm. Like she's on the front page rather than kind of anything like gossip columns. She's on magazines. She goes over to the United States. She dances with John Travolta. She completely, I think now it's quite strange looking back because we're in a post-Diana royal era. But before her, no one had really done this. Like in the way that we see Meghan and Kate now, it's completely new prior to Diana.
How was she received at the time?
Oh, people loved her. Yeah. And I think the press in particular absolutely loved her. You know, she made, as I say, like there's this almost like throwback to the imperial era, but when with the Queen and Prince Philip, this very posh, very kind of almost like resistant atmosphere around it. And all of a sudden you've got this young woman who's stunning and chatty and engaging. And it's just completely like reinvented what it was to be royal.
But obviously, you know, we do know that there was a darker side, I guess, to Diana. She did fight her demons quite a lot.
Yeah, I think this is kind of, she was exposed to reality really quite quickly. I think people forget how young she was when she first met Charles. Like she's just a teenager, essentially. And I think she had this almost romantic, childish vision of what it would be to be a princess. This idea that she was kind of going off with Prince Charming almost. And that immediately comes crashing down. I think it all links in, like the stuff with Camilla that we've already touched upon. And also I think their clash of personalities, like Charles didn't really spoil her. He didn't buy her flowers. When they'd go on their honeymoon, they went to Balmoral and he was like, you know, going off fishing and stuff like that and reading books rather than doting on her and going on romantic meals. And I think this kind of illusion came crashing down very quickly. And then later on, like, you know, there are stories, she apparently told Andrew Morton that really earlier in their relationship, Charles told her that she was a bit chubby. And then she had problems with bulimia. And it's really quite, there's almost two sides to it where you have this external vision of beauty and confidence. And then interior, you've got this kind of very quite, you know, worried and troubled young lady, essentially.
So it definitely will make for an interesting character, if anything, definitely. In The Crown. And it's I guess everyone's kind of discussing how they're going to portray her. Are they going to go down the positive or the negative? But we'll touch on that in a moment. Helen, so what do we know about who will be playing Lady Di?
So a bit like Claire Foy taking on the role of the Queen, when Claire took on the role, I didn't really know much about her and I didn't really know that much about Emma Corrin, who is taking on the role of Princess Diana. So there was so much speculation about who would take on the role. You had people like Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones being rumoured to be taking on the role. Yeah, I know, I personally didn't see it, but it would have been a big score for Netflix to get Sophie. But the thing is, I didn't really know a lot about her, but she has so much experience. She starred in ITV drama Grantchester as Esther in a short film Alex's Dream in 2018 and is also going to be appearing in Misbehaviour portraying Miss South America. She's also going to be in Batman's Butler Pennyworth series, which I think has got quite a lot of hype around it. So I think this could be kind of her moment. It could be where she, you know, when you get those films that people are in, and after that, they're just in like after hit, after hit, after hit, and they become like one of those really big stars. I think this could really be it for her in the same way that it kind of was a bit of a breakout role for Claire Foy. But yeah, I think she's really good casting for Diana from what I've seen filming and her kind of background.
It kind of feels like this is going to be the role that wins an award.
Oh yeah.
Like you can't have Diana not give her an award, really, I guess.
I think she'll either get like an Emmy or something for it, or yeah, she'll be slated. And I think it kind of depends if you're a Diana fan who's watching it, or like, I know a bit about Diana but not a lot, so I'm quite interested to see how Emma takes on that role. But from what I've seen, she kind of like fits into it so perfectly. All of the pictures that we've seen, it's kind of like looking at a mirror image, But then I don't know if that's just testament to how much effort and money the Crown put into their production.
Well, that's it. I mean, we have seen two kind of lots of filming pictures already of Emma. It seems to be when she's on tour in Australia. Tell me a bit about that, Helen.
So one of the first photos to be leaked from set was Emma filming as Diana in, I don't think they're in Australia. I feel like they're in Spain. I've just got that, I think that's why they're filming. But she's in this like long sleeve pink polka dot dress, about knee length with a matching hat. It's really, really accurate in my opinion, because if you put that picture of them filming against the one of Diana, I think it's just the color of the spots that are different. One's white, one's like a different shade of pink.
Horror.
Literally like shows how detailed it is. And it's very much, we've seen that in season 3 with all of the Queen's outfits, like her like coronation outfit, when she went to Aberfan as well, that kind of like coat with the fur trim, like just the detail that goes into everything. And I think as well, I read that her coronation dress was like one of the most expensive things they made. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think that just shows how much
I believe it. Definitely,
like, detail.
We have discussed the costumes on this podcast before. Are there any kind of Diana, iconic Diana costumes that you really want to see?
I would like love to see, you know, like the cycling shorts, the like jumpers, and then obviously we have to see the wedding dress, which we definitely will see in season 4. I'm saying definitely just because we know that when they go on tour, that's when, like, that was after William was born. So I'm guessing,
just timing wise.
The timeline. And also if they cut out the wedding, that's just like the biggest mistake I think Netflix could ever make, because everyone wants to see that dress. Yeah. It's just like probably going to be like the greatest sin Netflix ever commit if they do cut it out, because I just think like looking at the detail of the coronation dress and the wedding dress of like Claire Foy's Queen, I want to see it. Like, I would just watch The Crown just to see Diana's dress.
It would literally be the biggest sacrilege since cancelling the OA, in my opinion.
And also, we also need to see the revenge dress, as they all call it. You know, that like kind of mini black dress.
The black number. Yeah.
I want to see that. That might be season 5, I guess, though.
Not quite yet. But we have seen some other filming pictures. I guess it was from the same tour, right?
Yeah. So this one's a lot more relaxed. So it's kind of like a white, kind of loose fitting dress. Prince Charles, Josh O'Connor is with her also, and he's in like this cream, like beigey, like sandy color, like shirt and trousers, and it looks like they're in the desert where they're filming, or like somewhere just very beachy and sandy. But again, the comparison between the filming pictures and what happened is so, so similar. It is just like looking like which one is real. Like, I did have to do a little bit of a double take. Maybe that's just how grainy the pap shots were from a long distance. I don't know. But they did look very, very similar.
So Tom, what do we know of these filming pictures? What do they kind of give away from the history of Charles and Diana?
With the pictures, I think, to be honest, it's probably more a case of looking at the tour itself. Like, the tour itself was a huge success from everything you read. And apparently at the time, and it seems a little bit daft now, but like at the time, Australia was actually had quite a lot of Republican sentiments. And was looking at some quite like anti-royal family rhetoric going out there, and the Australian press was basically kind of putting comment pieces anti the Queen, etc., etc. Charles and Diana went over there, and they just fell in love with her. Essentially, it wasn't really Charles; it was just entirely her. So the tour itself, like, couldn't really have been more successful with that in mind. They basically saved the monarchy in an Australian sense.
And so, it came after they were married, after the birth of William as
well. Yeah, and she insisted as well, like, it was really unusual for royals at that time to take young children on tours with them. So you can see, like, in season 1 and 2, they leave Philip and the Queen, leave Charles and Anne behind. And whereas Diana insisted on taking William, made a real point out of it. And basically, like, that was a part of her whole kind of philosophy, in a way, that she wanted to be a real mother rather than a royal mother. Mm. She was sometimes quite sort of subtly critical of the Queen for being quite distant, or appearing to be quite distant with her children, and made a real point with Harry and William that she was going to be what we would probably consider a more kind of traditional, what, like, day-to-day mother, essentially.
I guess that's kind of carried through as well to Harry and William.
Yeah,
they're 100%. Very much following that trait.
Yeah.
If, like, kind of like we saw with Prince Harry and baby Archie and Meghan, did Diana kind of showcase William to the world on the tour. Do we know that?
Yes, essentially.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I think Kate and William, when they went to Australia, they did similar with George, where a lot of the kind of this interactions where they go to the zoo and stuff like that, and they went to the same zoo with George that Charles and Diana went to with William.
Oh, so
and
cute.
There's loads of little parallels. Like if you search it, there's it's strange. When George went, he just looked so much like William did when he went with those two.
Because there's a lot being made of like the kind of similarities between what William and Kate dressed George in with what Charles and Diana dressed William in. The scarily similar. Like it's almost as if it's the same costume.
Yeah, I feel like there has been reports that some of it has been like not hand-me-downs but like the same. Yeah, like
you
the
would.
Same thing. Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you've got it, use it.
But yeah, so that's really interesting that they kind of choose to send Charles and Diana out, the celebrity couple. Yeah. You know, they're really kind of mastering PR at this point.
Yeah, essentially. I think as well, there's probably, in terms of her as a role for the series, I think there's probably parallels in the way that writers have used Princess Margaret's role in series 1 to 3, in the sense that she's sort of this like glamorous figure. And there's the episode where she goes over to America. There's probably parallels in terms of what we're talking here with Diana in Australia in season 4 as what Margaret did with Lyndon Johnson in series 3 when she goes over and kind of saves the crown again with the Americans, but only in this sense with Australia.
So judging on the timeline, I guess it's a question to both of you. What do you kind of expect to see from Diana? And I guess the Queen, because maybe the Queen's not going to feature as heavily in season 4.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of a point where we might see the Queen kind of stepping back. We've seen Charles and Anne in season 3. We haven't really seen Andrew and Edward yet. But I think this might be the time where it kind of becomes more like Charles is going to, like, they're preparing him to be king, and then he's going to marry Diana. We'll see them have William. We might see them have Harry. And then ultimately, like, where's it going to go? We know they decided to end their marriage. So it could be ending with, like, that kind of bombshell, and then season 5 might go into, like, the aftermath of that, like, kind of, I don't know, seeing like Harry and William like grow up. We are very quickly catching up to where we are right now. So maybe, I don't know if they're going to stretch it out a little bit, because there's going to be so much more in terms of like, you need to like look at characters a little bit more closely. Like, are we going to spend like maybe a whole episode just looking at Charles and Diana, like how their relationship grows, and then maybe the episode ends with the wedding? Or I would actually just really like just a whole episode on the wedding. Like, just the detail, like, what's going on behind the scenes. How was Diana feeling before the wedding? How was Charles feeling? The whole thing about how she was looking for Camilla. Like, just those details are, like, what I want to say. And I think it would be nice to see them stretch it out a little bit. But we know the Crown doesn't really do that. But then also we've got Margaret Thatcher coming in. So it's kind of going to be, like, the Queen, Diana and Thatcher, like, all fighting for the episodes, I think. And then, obviously, I just feel like Charles is going to be pushed to the back, because Diana, I think, will really outshine him in this series.
That's interesting, because very much in season 3 we see Charles kind of becoming his own, and you know, we've had discussions about this, how sorry we feel for him in season 3, because he does learn some hard lessons, I guess, from the Queen. Talking more about how we think Diana will be portrayed, it's kind of interesting, because are they going to take Charles's side or are they going to take Diana's side? Because obviously it's a topic that divides the country. It's not just kind of an easy topic to decide
it's
on.
It's hard, yeah.
It's hard to know the truth, I guess.
Yeah. I think probably the only way they can do it is if they do a little bit of both. I don't know. Personally, I'm really interested in how they're going to portray Camilla in this. Mm. I think that's something that, because they could go one or two ways, and there's this whole narrative that, you know, she's behind the breakup of the marriage, or could they be a little bit more sympathetic and portray it as, like they've set up in season 3, that she's the love of Charles's life, so she's the woman he always wanted anyway, and actually Charles and Diana's marriage is a little bit false, or are they just going to portray her as the bad woman in the background sort of thing? I think that could be really interesting.
It's hard because you probably going to upset someone with it.
Exactly, yeah. You're sort of standing on eggshells, essentially.
Helen, what do you think?
Yeah. I think for headlines, Netflix might go down a bit of a risky route and kind of not show Diana as like favorably as we would all like to, well, I would personally like to see her portrayed. Like, she did do, as you said, like, so much good stuff. Like, she wasn't like afraid. She just didn't think about, like, she just thought, all right, okay, there's a stigma around this, who cares? Like, I'm just like, I will go and shake hands with someone who's got AIDS. Like, and then the whole thing in where she walked through, is it the mine?
Yeah, the landmines. Yeah. I think Angola.
Which Prince Harry just kind of recreated.
She kind of came off a little bit like fearless to me, like very brave. And she kind of did move things forward. And I would really like to see that, because I think that's more of like an inspiring side for them to take, because there's a lot of probably the younger generation. Like, I think I was maybe like 6 when Diana died. So I didn't really know what was going on at the time. But then there's a lot of people who now know who Princess Diana is, but didn't grow up with her. So I think it is, you'd kind of want to maybe like inspire like a younger generation watching it. I don't know who is watching The Crown. I guess it's kind of for all ages, but I think it would probably be better to put her as someone who she kind of inspired like William and Harry in a lot of the work that they do and a lot of other people. And I just think that if they portrayed Diana in a bad way, it would just go down like a lead balloon, but they might do it for the headlines.
It is interesting because, you know, playing devil's advocate, I do personally agree with you, but, you know, there are kind of rumours of Diana caught in the press, and she did big tell-all interviews, which were quite scandalous at the time, you know, about her divorce. And you kind of wonder, you know, she obviously had a different side to her. She, you know, not everyone is a one-sided character. But, you know, I wonder how much they're going to tap into that side as well.
I think more so than anything they've ever covered, this is probably the riskiest thing that's the riskiest storyline they've probably ever embarked on, really. Because they could go really quite harsh on her, or they could be really, it's really, as you say, standing on eggshells, essentially, because there are interviews later in the 90s where there are two sides to every story, essentially, aren't there? And she was very vocal and anti-Charles, more so than, and he was kind of a lot more reserved about it. And even now, like, he never really speaks about it. Whereas she kind of had no reservations at all from kind of dishing the dirt, as it were. So it'll be really interesting to see how they portray it. I'm not sure they can go that far, because the backlash, particularly in the UK, would be so strong, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I think they'll probably stay fairly neutral with it, stick to as many facts as possible.
That might come in season 5, like once their marriage has broke down, and then kind of seeing how they both deal with that. But I don't know, maybe they will portray here as like, the whole thing is like, she's not enjoying the honeymoon in Balmoral. Like, I think maybe they'll kind of show her as like innocent, naive going into it, and then realizing it's not what she wanted, and then her kind of like getting annoyed about it, and then kind of seeing her develop as a character. Like, I think it might be more of like a journey. So I think you'd probably go through all of the emotions, like feeling sorry for her, disliking her, like feeling inspired by her, like, and then of course the whole like the emotions surrounding her like tragic death. So I think Netflix have a really good opportunity to go on a journey with her, because I think the whole interviews afterwards, like, she'd been in the royal family where you can't really go, like, you can't really say a lot. It's kind of like, okay, well, they're gossiping about you in the papers or like in magazines, on TV, just don't say anything, and then no one will, you can't, like, don't feed the gossip. But she came out, and I think maybe that was, she just kind of was like, I need my opinion to be kind of said.
She'd had what you're describing, she'd had 15 years if not more of being stifled, essentially. So I suppose after that long, you probably would, you know, have like a little bit of a backlash behind it. And like you say about the revenge dress and those interviews and that sort of thing, it is understandable after all that time.
Well, we wait with bated breath, but just looking forward to season 5. There have been rumours already about a recasting. So over the weekend, Imelda Staunton was rumoured as replacing Olivia Colman as the Queen. What do we make of that?
I think I don't know. The thing is, with Imelda Staunton is a great actor, don't get me wrong, but when Olivia Colman took on the Queen, for the first episode, all I could see was Olivia Colman, and a lot of the times in The Crown, all I could see was Olivia Colman and Olivia Colman's laugh. It wasn't, I couldn't see her as the Queen as much as Claire Foy. So I think if Imelda comes into it, again, she's like a big name like Olivia is, whereas Claire obviously is a really big name, but I felt like that was more of a breakout role for her. Like, everyone knows her name around the world now. I didn't really know that much about her before, but I knew a lot about Olivia Colman. I know a lot about Imelda Staunton. And maybe it is just like, I think the thing is, as the Queen ages, you're going to find it harder to find like a new...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Like, some new talent, because there's not that many older actresses coming into the game, if that makes sense. So I think it's something that can't be avoided, but I hope that Imelda kind of takes on the role a bit more than Olivia Colman. I think maybe she's got like some big shoes to step into, obviously, but also she is going to be coming into a season where I think it's all going to go absolutely horrible. Like Diana's death, like the whole fallout from that, you have to be a great actress to like take on that kind of responsibility. So if it is her, I think she'll do a really good job, but I think it might have been a bit nicer to see someone lesser known for me.
I think having seen her in, she was in Vera Drake, and I think having seen that movie, and it's obviously a very charged movie, but I think she is probably the right person to do the kind of scenes that we're expecting in season five. Obviously, we are expecting Diana's death, the kind of changing of the royal family. They were prompted to really change after it. And I think you need that kind of stalwart British actor to take you through it on that occasion, I think.
Also, are they going to dye her hair? Like, how much are they going to age the Queen?
This is the big question.
Sorry, I was just thinking, this just came into my head, like, because they're going to do a cast change for season five, but then I just don't know how, like, how long are they going to go with
Well,
this?
I was thinking, how much are they going to change the cast? Because we'll have only seen Emma Corrin as Diana for one season. So are they going to get rid of her and get an older Diana?
Because then that might mean that you keep Josh O'Connor for like three seasons.
Yeah,
like
they'd have to get rid of everyone again. And it's formulaic. It's how The Crown works. Every two seasons, switch everyone out. But it seems a shame when, you know, yeah, you've brought in Emma Corrin, who looks the double of Diana, to kind of get rid of her so easily.
Yeah, especially like she might just be in those two seasons anyway. So I'd kind of be like, well, you know, I'm only going to be here for two seasons. Just keep me in rather
yeah,
than...
Yeah, but then it would be keeping Josh O'Connor in as well.
Oh, maybe they'll get some really good prosthetics.
Dilemmas. These are the big questions.
Yeah, this is what you really want to know.
Well, that's all for this week. Thank you so much, Helen Kelly and Tom Evans, for joining us for our chat about The Crown. And please do follow us on Twitter at Netflix Pod and join in with the debate. Next week, we're going to be discussing Power, the best show on Netflix you've probably never heard of, but you're going to want to watch it soon. Stay tuned. See you later.